Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 3rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, What to Expect in Midland in 2023, by Stuart Doreen. An answer about the 5.4 quakes? When 2022 ended, the Railroad Commission had sent inspectors to far west Texas and northwest of Midland. The RRC reported its staff will review permit requirements for other injection wells in the area as it prepares for a response to reduce the frequency and intensity of earthquakes. Road bond projects to continue. City officials have said 20 of the 26 road bond projects are complete. Updates for 2023 include New York Avenue, completed in early 2023, maybe as early as January. A Street, north of Scarborough, completed in late spring. Solomon Lane, completed in summer of 2023. Illinois Avenue, A Street to the hospital, completed by the end of June. The Garfield Avenue project, to the north of Midland Memorial Hospital, is expected to take another 18 months. Elections. The two most likely candidates for a tax election are Midland County and Midland ISD. Midland County officials want to build a new jail complex, and they have talked about using a county assistance district, sales tax increase outside the city and inside the county, to pay for it. Outgoing County Commissioner Randy Prude recently stated passage of the district could bring an additional $80 million a year into the county coffers. Midland ISD is on the verge of proposing its next bond election. November appears to be a possible month for a proposition that includes funding to help the district deal with improving the condition of buildings currently in place and helping the district with grade reconfiguration, including putting freshmen on high school campuses. There are no city-county school district candidate elections scheduled for 2023. Changing of the guard. There will be new elected representatives in 2023. On the Midland County Commissioner's Court, Jeff Summers and Diane Anderson will represent Precinct 2 and 4, respectively. The Midland City Council will see the following changes. Lori Blong as mayor, and Amy Stretcher-Burks in District 4. Legislative session in Austin. Kevin Sparks will become the new state senator for District 31, which includes Midland, Odessa, and Amarillo. He replaces Kel Seliger, a Republican from Amarillo. The 140-day legislative session is scheduled to begin January 10th and end May 29th. Expect priorities to include the GROW Fund, which would allot additional dollars to oil and natural gas producing areas. It remains to be seen if Midland ISD gets any help with the amount of its recapture payment, $671 million to Austin for redistribution to poorer districts since the 2013-14 school year, and longer-term transition grant funding. Currently, the district receives more than $60 million from the state, temporary transition aid to school districts and charter schools impacted with less state and local funding under House Bill 3. Tom Craddock, the Dean of State Legislators, will again represent Midland County in the Texas House. He has represented Midland County every year since 1969. New City and MISD Executives. New Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard is scheduled to begin January 3rd, Tuesday. It was also announced in 2022 that city manager Robert Patrick will retire in the spring. Permian Basin Gives. The one-day event encouraging area residents to create meaningful impact through the nonprofits that serve our community is set for February 21st. Please go to permianbasingives.org for more information. Sparks to be honored. The Permian Basin Petroleum Association will honor Don Sparks as its top hand with a banquet on January 18th. Sparks also is one of four members of the Petroleum Hall of Fame's class of 2023, joining F. Murray Hall, Kenneth B. Nolan, and Edward Runyon. The induction ceremony will be April 30th at the Bush Convention Center. How low will it go? Midland's jobless rate fell to 2.8% in November. That tied Midland with Amarillo and Austin for the lowest in the state. The record low unemployment rate in the Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area is 1.7% in April 2019. This article is entitled, MMH Announces First Baby of 2023 in Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Memorial Hospital reported that Matias Hernandez was born at 12:13 a.m. to Erica Flores Fuentes and Juan Hernandez. Matias weighs 7 pounds 1 ounce and is 20 inches long, according to Midland Health. The family will be presented with a gift basket full of items for the new baby and mom. Items in the gift basket include onesie set, socks, soap set, and pacifiers from Hope Chest, a program sponsored by Midland Health and Midland Memorial Foundation, Anthus Boutique gift card from Anthus, onesie, burp rag, ball, two free classes from the Little Gym, blanket set from Nifty Knitters of Midland, baby's first ornament and gift card from Miss Casey's. The gift basket was beautifully arranged by Flowerland. Midland Memorial Hospital would like to thank all these businesses and individuals for their donations to our first baby of 2023. This column is called Commentary. It is entitled, 10 Questions for Midland as 2023 Begins, by Stuart Doreen, editor of the Midland Reporter-Telegram. He can be reached at sdoreen@hearstnp.com. The following are 10 questions, in no particular order, that I have for 2023. Is the intercession calendar dead at Midland ISD? The idea of providing a week in the fall and spring for struggling students might have run its course. Board President Brian Murray said as much when he said, after the announcement of Stephanie Howard as the next superintendent, that district leaders would be looking at the calendar in 2023-24. Intercession wasn't popular with parents in Midland, and the district didn't have the metrics for the board on how much intercession worked in the fall. Teachers were reportedly given premium pay for that extra week, but they also apparently want more development days in the next calendar. Is a bond inevitable in 2023? Howard has already commented about Midland ISD's aged facilities, and a bond appears to be the only way to make grade reconfiguration take place. At this point, it might not be a matter of if, but when. And the other question is how much? With a new high school appearing to cost as much as $400 million, Midland's most expensive bond issue is likely to cover improvements at existing facilities and new or expanded high school facilities. What will happen at Hogan Park? To know the answer here, there is one thing worth watching. How much money has been raised? In November, officials said around $30 million of the $45 million in private funds had been committed. The amount raised will impact how much can be done, and the ultimate size of the project could impact negotiations between the City of Midland and the Quality of Place Conservancy. City officials have previously stated there is no agreement in place, and that the two entities have talked about what a deal could look like. Will county government change that much? There has been conversation that since Terry Johnson is working with a politically friendlier court, he won't be handcuffed. It is a given that the horseshoe will be targeted by the new court, although the current agreement with the operator ends in 2024. But what else will be dramatically different? The budgeting process? More resolutions on social issues like those on abortion and the Second Amendment? Johnson has yet to explain his vision for when the new court is assembled and how much county government will change, if at all. Can the county officials convince voters outside the city to vote for a county assistance district? Here's the deal. Everyone knows a new jail is going to happen. County leaders are purchasing the land. Johnson has basically told people during radio appearances that the only question remaining is whether it will be paid for using property tax revenues or sales tax. At some point in 2023 or early 2024, a county assistance district, which could put as much as $80 million annually into the county coffers, will go before voters outside the city of Midland. The proposition to create a county assistance district has already failed once, collecting around 31% of the vote in 2021. We will see what changes to educate voters that the district is indeed in their best interest. The campaign probably starts with, "You don't want your property taxes to increase." What will the legislative session mean to Midland? It seems like every 2 years there is a major development from local representation. Read here State Representative Tom Craddock, the Dean of all Texas legislators. Recent legislative gets include money for a mental health facility, an engineering building at UTPB, the Physician Assistance Program at Midland College, the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, and other gets for Midland ISD, the City of Midland, UTPB, and Permian Basin Petroleum Museum. What about Midland ISD's academic gains? It seems a certainty that the state will be tougher graders when it comes to its 2022-23 report card. Less credit for campuses or districts when it comes to growth, is how education officials described it. So, what will that mean for Midland campuses? Will the Midland City Council greenlight funding for road construction newer parts of Midland? We know that the city is not where it needs to be with roads like Briarwood Avenue and the Wadley Avenue extension. Here is another worry that has come up in the last month. The city has announced it will chase an entertainment complex / big box retailer / shopping area in West Midland. In fact, it will use millions of dollars in incentives to motivate the developer to come to Midland. A plea in 2023 is for city officials to explain the potential impact on roads on State Highway 191, frontage roads, State Highway 158, and the intersection at State Highway 158 and State Highway 191, and east-west roads in northwest Midland. City leaders, feel free to use the reporter telegram to help explain what that development, along with other growth in that area, will mean to traffic and what improvements are needed. Is there anything that can be done to strengthen the workforce in Midland County? The great thing about a more disciplined approach to production is that a 2.8% unemployment didn't happen overnight, but it did happen. Midland is tied for the lowest unemployment rate in the state. This lack of workforce appears to be impacting restaurants and retailers as much as any industries. Will 2023 be the year to show Midland can get its arms around this problem? Is the Permian running out of premium rock? A Bloomberg report stated that a problem impacting other shale areas might have arrived in the Permian. Most of the top-tier land has already been developed. Even that article stated the lack of premium rock won't impact oil production in the short term. But what about the next decade and beyond? The request here is to have smarter people in the industry help educate us on what the truth is. This article is entitled MISD Statement on Death of the 14-Year-Old. Source, MISD. Midland ISD is aware of reports of a Midland child's passing due to injuries sustained following a vehicle pedestrian accident on January 1st. The district would like to share the following statement at this time. Midland ISD is deeply saddened to learn of the passing of a 14-year-old Midland girl following a vehicle pedestrian accident on Sunday. Our thoughts and prayers are with the child's family, friends, and loved ones. Counseling support and resources will be available for staff and students when they return on Tuesday and Wednesday, respectively. This article is entitled MPD, Teenage Girl in Accident Passes Away, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 14-year-old Midland female involved in a pedestrian accident in Northeast Midland has passed away, according to the City of Midland. Following the accident, the victim was transported to Lubbock, where she succumbed to her injuries earlier Monday, the city reported. On Sunday, Midland police reported that a juvenile female riding an electric skateboard was involved in a collision with a vehicle around 6:30 p.m. The investigation revealed that a juvenile female was riding an electric skateboard in the 5500 block of Magellan Street, MPD reported. The juvenile crossed the intersection of Magellan Street and Mockingbird Lane and was struck by a vehicle traveling westbound on Mockingbird Lane. The driver remained at the scene. Following an investigation by the Midland Police Department, it was determined no citations or arrests will be made. Next of kin has been notified. This was the first reported fatality inside Midland County in 2023, according to Reporter Telegram records. This article is entitled, MPD Investigates Human Remains Found in Southeast Midland, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. Midland Police Department officers are investigating human remains found in the 1700 block of East Texas Avenue. MPD reported that at approximately 11:18 a.m. Friday, officers were dispatched to that area in reference to possible human remains found. Officers on scene confirmed the remains are human, MPD reported. There were no apparent signs of criminal activity, but the remains may have been there for an extended period of time. MPD also reported the remains will be taken to Dallas County Medical Examiner's Office for further processing. The investigation is ongoing to identify the deceased individual. This article is entitled Midland's 2022 Weather in Review, by Stuart Doreen. Temperature ups, downs. The average temperature for 2022 was 64.9 degrees, which is cooler than the typical average for Midland, 65.8 degrees. It was the second straight year the average for the year was below normal. There were warm moments. the NWS showed the spring was the 9th warmest on record, and the summer was the 7th warmest on record. The cooler moments included the 2nd coldest February on record, nearly 8 degrees below average, and a cooler-than-average fall. The NWS showed an average temperature during the months of September, October, and November was 2.6 degrees below normal. Record book changes. The 73 straight days of 90-degree high temperatures from June 4th to August 15th was the 7th longest stretch in Midland history. The 131 days of 90-degree high temperatures in 2022 was the 10 most of any year on record. The 34 days of 100-degree high temperatures in 2022 was tied for the 9th most of any year on record. May and July were the 3rd warmest on record for their respective months. Rain went away. The National Weather Service showed 9.4 inches of rainfall in 2022. That is 4.11 inches below normal for Midland. It was not one of the 10 driest years on record. 43.19% of the rainfall in 2022 came in August, 4.06 inches. That was the 5th highest total of any August in Midland history. 21.27% of the total rainfall during the entire year came on August 20th, 2.00 inches of rain. The rainfall during the fall provided relief for the region when it came to extraordinary drought conditions, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor and Keach-Byram Drought Index. Other weather notables. There was 1.1 inches of snow, all in February. The growing season, days between the last freeze in winter, spring, and the first freeze in the fall, winter, was 238 days, which is 10 days greater than average for Midland, 228. The hottest high temperature was 105 degrees, multiple times in 2022. The coldest low temperature was 7 degrees, February 7th. Source, National Weather Service. This article is entitled, ERCOT's Independent Monitor Says Texas Shouldn't Meddle with Power Market, by Philip Jankowski, Dallas Morning News. Austin. The independent authority for Texas's power grid operator ERCOT has a novel idea for how state officials should tackle restructuring Texas's electricity market in the wake of 2021's deadly winter storm. Do nothing. Numerous proposals are before the Public Utility Commission to overhaul how electricity is bought and sold on Texas's power grid. The commission, which regulates the Electric Reliability Council of Texas and is made up of board members appointed by Governor Greg Abbott, has proposed a unique market structure that would pay a premium for electricity produced by natural gas. That proposal has faced pushback for relying on an untested structure. But Republican state lawmakers appear united in providing some sort of incentives toward instantly available dispatchable energy, which in Texas is code for natural gas. At stake is the resiliency of the state's electric grid, which was pushed to the brink of collapse in the February 2021 winter storm that led to widespread blackouts and killed more than 200 Texans. The chosen market structure also will trickle down to most Texans' electric bills, likely increasing their monthly charge for keeping the lights on. Texas currently operates an energy-only market, a deregulated sector that allows power producers to sell electricity on a competitive market and lets most consumers in Texas choose a power plan to their liking. Potomac Economics, ERCOT's independent market monitor, wrote in a comment submitted to the PUC that changes already made to Texas's electricity market increased energy prices enough to encourage the construction of new natural gas power plants. "We continue to believe in the effectiveness of the energy-only market," the firm wrote. The most substantial change was in December 2021, when the PUC changed a market demand curve that lowered the energy price cap from $9,000 per megawatt hour to $5,000 per megawatt hour, but also made it easier to reach the lucrative price cap. Potomac estimates that those changes added $1.7 billion in revenue to Texas's real-time electricity market in 2022 through November 30th. Of that revenue, 61% went to natural gas power producers, outpacing the sector's total contribution to Texas's energy capacity. "We are confident that investment in dispatchable gas resources will continue and possibly accelerate," Potomac wrote. This article is entitled "Anniversaries" from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. 5 years. November 7, 2018. A pair of propositions to provide $100 million to improve Midland's streets and infrastructure, the road bond, was passed with more than 57% of the vote. It was the third time in the city's history that a bond of more than $100 million had passed. 10 years. November 5, 2013. At-large Councilman Jerry Morales dominated a five-person field to become the first minority mayor in Midland history. December 9, 2013. The Midland Christian School football team defeated Katy Pope John Paul XXIII 28-20 to capture the program's third consecutive TAPS title and seventh overall. The Mustangs finished with its first undefeated season under head coach Greg McClendon. 20 years. January 11, 2003. After 34 years in the House, State Representative Tom Craddock became the first Republican speaker in more than 130 years. 25 years. March 14, 1998. The Midland High boys basketball team defeated San Antonio Taft 63-51 in Austin to capture its first Class 5A basketball title. Three Bulldogs, Kirby Lemons, Jay Christian, and Charles Tatum, scored all of MHS's points. December 19, 1998, Lee High School trounced San Antonio MacArthur 54-0 at Irving's Texas Stadium to win the first of three straight Class 5A state football championships. 30 years. 1993. Betty Noble Starnes founded Hillcrest School with 18 students in grades kindergarten through ninth. 35 years. November 1988. The famous coin flip took place at an I-20 truck stop to decide the postseason participants from District 4 5A. Coaches from Midland High, Lee, and Odessa Permian participated. Permian and Lee advanced as their coins showed heads. 45 years. May 28, 1978. Al Unser drove Jim Hall's car to victory at the Indianapolis 500. It was the first Indy title for Hall. 55 years. April 1, 1968. The U.S. Supreme Court decided in Avery versus Midland County that commissioners' precincts must be redrawn as necessary to maintain a generally equal population within the four precincts. The court based its decision on the principle of one man, one vote. 65 years. 1958. The Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity established Episcopal Day School, which became Trinity School of Midland. Kindergarten and first grade were offered at the church. 90 years. February 8, 1933. The National Weather Service recorded a low temperature of minus 11 degrees, the lowest minimum temperature ever in Midland. According to Texas A&M University, the temperature was minus 23 degrees in Seminole, which is a record for the all-time low in the state. 100 years. May 28, 1923. Santa Rita No. 1 discovery well of the Big Lake oil field in West Texas, blue. This article is entitled Save the Date in 2023. To add your community event to this list, or to the community roundup, send the information to sdoreen@hearstnp.com. Save the Date. Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo in Odessa, January 5th to 14th. Midland County Livestock Show, January 12th to 14th, at the Horseshoe. Midland Chamber of Commerce's State of Oil and Gas, featuring Richard Dealey, President and COO of Pioneer Natural Resources, January 17th, Bush Convention Center. West Texas Sports Banquet and Memorabilia Auction, February 1st, Midland Country Club. An Evening with Lyle Lovett and His Acoustic Group, February 7th, Wagner Noel. Permian Basin Gives, February 21st. Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference, March 1st to 2nd. Midland College Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series presents An Evening with Emmett Smith, March 23rd, at the Schaap Center. Old Sorehead Trade Days in Stanton, April 15th to 16th. Petroleum Hall of Fame, April 30th, Bush Convention Center. Legacy High School Graduation, May 25th. Midland High Graduation, May 26th. Mextech's Family Fiesta, June 10th. Midland County Fair, August 24th to 27th at the Horseshoe. Old Sorehead Trade Days in Stanton, October 14th to 15th. Permian Basin International Oil Show, October 17th to 19th at the Ector County Coliseum. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, January 3rd. Suzanne Sue Sutherland. Suzanne Sue Sutherland passed away with her children by her side on December 15, 2022, at Columbus Oaks Nursing Home in Columbus, Texas, after a long battle with chronic illness and post-COVID-19 complications. Sue Lee was born in 1938 in Missouri, where she met her future husband Jim and graduated high school. Sue and Jim Sutherland were married in 1958. A few years later, they moved to Midland, Texas, where they raised their children, lived most of their lives, and were faithful and longtime members of Grace Lutheran Church. Sue moved to Katy, Texas, to be closer to her children after Jim passed away in 2007. Sue is preceded in death by her husband, Jim Sutherland, father Lloyd Lee, mother Margaret Lee Oaks, stepfather Martin C. Oaks, brother Lloyd S. Buddy Lee, and her grandmother Isabel Hunt, who helped Sue's mother raise her after her father passed away. Sue is survived by her children, Kim, Drew Lynch, and their children, Austin Lynch and Carolyn Lynch, Jim, Joyce Sutherland, and their children, Ashley Earhart, Jacob Hannah Sutherland, and Matthew Andrea Sutherland, Connie Sutherland, and her great-grandchildren, Hadassah, Elijah, and Jack James Sutherland. Graveside services for Sue will be held January 6th at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery in Midland. To honor Sue's life and in lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Trinity Lutheran Church in Frelsburg, P.O. Box 245, New Ulm, Texas, 78950. Online condolences may be given at www.henneke funeralhome.com. Death notices. Barbara Ann Carrick Horn. Barbara Ann Carrick Horn, 87, died on Sunday, December 4th in Midland. Rosary will be held at 6 p.m. and a celebration of life at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, January 4th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, January 5th at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Graveside service will be held Thursday, January 5th at the Old Andrews Cemetery in Andrews at 2 p.m. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning and Happy New Year. This is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is January 3rd, 2023. City may spend $338,000 for consulting firm. Move could signal no search for new city manager. 3 weeks ago, the Odessa City Council voted 5-2 to fire the city manager and the city attorney and to begin the search process for their positions. However, neither position has been advertised, and the council is now poised to spend $338,000 on a consulting firm to provide professional services for the benefit of the interim city manager, including advising and consulting, organizational analysis, and training on leadership transition management. On December 13th, the council fired city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks without explanation and appointed former billings and collections director Agapito Bernal as interim city manager and former senior city attorney Dan Jones as interim city attorney. According to Tuesday's agenda, the council is being asked to approve a resolution that would allow them to amend this year's budget to hire T2 Professional Consulting. If hired, T2 will also conduct diagnostic meetings with city leadership and internal and external stakeholders, create a benchmark committee, and guide the council in public relations. According to the resolution, T2 will provide Bernal training in leadership processes and tools, recruitment and selection, and group development and engagement. Lastly, the company would serve as liaison with vendors hired to complete specific tasks. District 2 City Council member Steve Thompson said most contracts are part of the packet given to council members prior to their meetings, but no proposed contract with T2 was attached. Based on the wording on the agenda, Thompson speculated some council members may want T2 to groom Bernal for Marrero's position without engaging in a search for a qualified candidate. No other council members returned phone calls seeking comment. Thompson voted against Marrero and Brooks' termination, calling them excellent employees. Bernal met with all city department heads 2 weeks ago and issued various directives. Bernal spoke about empowering trusted employees, transparency, teamwork, and improving customer service, not only with residents but amongst each other. What we want to do is tear down these silos. There will be no more siloing. We're going to work together because we are one organization and everyone needs each other. No one can do it on their own. No one can. We need each other, Bernal said. Bernal said all of the departments need to come together to form one organization. Everyone here is so special to do what they do. Just think if we all just go the same way, Bernal said, we'll be unstoppable. Bernal also told the department heads to update their city website pages, give organizational charts to the city's human resource director, and to start thinking about zero-based budgeting because the city needs to find some money. According to LinkedIn, T2 was founded 15 months ago by Michael Wilson, a former Keller police chief who also created New and Blue at the same time. The latter is a business that provides law enforcement agencies with comprehensive technology solutions. A search of T2's address comes back to a house in Fort Worth. Public safety raises are also on Tuesday's agenda. The council is set to discuss the results of the public safety personnel salary implementation. The result of the public safety salaries will be discussed. During the December 13th meeting, the council voted 5-2 to immediately give raises to Odessa's emergency responders using American Rescue Plan Act funds. District 1 council member Mark Mata told his colleagues the raises would cost the city $2.9 million a year, but acknowledged he had run his numbers past Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services Cindy Muncy, who has since announced she is resigning effective Friday. Thompson said Monday night the actual cost of the raises is well over $3 million. No information about the raises was included in the council members' packet, nor was there any information in the packet about forensic audits. The council is scheduled to discuss going out to bid for a forensic audit Tuesday night as well. A forensic audit is an examination of financial records to find any illegal financial activity. Thompson said he doesn't see the need for a forensic audit and noted that although the city's charter allows for an annual audit, it doesn't allow for a forensic audit. According to city records, the council is also scheduled to discuss reconstructing 17,000 square feet of pavement on East 31st Street from Andrews Highway to North Dixie Boulevard. The project will also include the installation of alley approaches, replacing curbs, gutters, and sidewalks. Four companies bid on the project, with the highest bid coming in at $2.7 million and the lowest at $1,450,000. City staff also hopes to convince the council to replace a 2013 sewer vacuum truck at a cost of $526,246 and purchase nearly $953,000 worth of sodium hydroxide, a chemical they buy annually to increase pH levels in potable water to help protect against corrosion. Starting next week, the Odessa City Council will begin holding its work session meetings just prior to their regularly scheduled council meetings, which are held on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month. The discussions held during the first work session of every month will pertain to items scheduled to be voted on during the fourth Tuesday of the month. The council approved the change in order to give city staff additional time to prepare for council meetings, as they will no longer have to meet on the first and third Tuesday of the month. Sleep, hydration, diet ways to combat anxiety and depression. Since the advent of COVID-19, mental health providers have seen an increase in anxiety and depression across the board. Dr. Stephanie Moses, the creator and director of a mental health fellowship for mental health clinicians and primary care, said there has been a lot of attention on school-age children, so we definitely know there's been a significant impact there, and also in the geriatric population. But my guess is it's across the board. It's hitting young adults, middle-aged adults. I think it's just so widespread, Moses said. She added that this is the after effect of COVID. At the very beginning, there was a lot of anxiety and fear, but it kind of felt particularly in our nation that people were pulling together and trying to be supportive. Then just a lot of other social stressors and tensions happened. That's definitely still a thing since oil just dropped within the last week or two, so people are stressed, Moses said in a December 20th interview. But then also, once you hit September, October, generally speaking, going into the holiday season, people start to feel either an onset of their symptoms or symptoms get worse because the holiday time tends to be extremely stressful for a significant amount of people, Moses said. Right now, we're hearing about family and stress of family during the holidays, but ultimately, finances remain a constant stressor for a lot of people. Another stressor is healthcare, with the tripledemic of COVID, RSV, and flu. People and parents are very concerned about that. Those are probably the most major themes, she said. She added that it's important to know that it's okay not to be okay sometimes, and you don't have to power through everything. You don't have to suffer in silence, she said. Tell someone like a trusted friend or doctor what's going on and if you're not feeling well. If your symptoms last longer than 7 to 10 days, they're not improving and it's disrupting your daily life, it's time to go to the doctor and get checked out. She added that it's important to unplug from the news and social media and do things that bring you peace and joy, even if it's just for 15 minutes a day, to allow yourself to decompress. Right now, during the holiday season, one of the most troubling things for a lot of people is being social. But also being social around trusted loved ones is one of the biggest predictors against an onset of depression, too. So it can start to eliminate that risk if you're able to be social and you have people in your life that you do trust and enjoy their company, Moses said. It's also very, very important right now to watch your intake of substance. A lot of people will increase their alcohol intake during the holidays because all of the holidays festivities. Alcohol is a depressant, so that can impact mood and, for a lot of people, it creates more anxiety. It has what we call this kind of kickback or rebound effect, where it will increase your anxiety. Sleep is also extremely important. Getting a significant and a proper amount of sleep at this time, staying hydrated, the normal things that our body needs to function optimally, like our diet and our sleep and water intake, are the things that tend to dissipate quite a bit during the holidays. So I think keeping those things in mind and doing those simple things can really do a lot to help people manage more stress that's going on, whether it's holiday-related, pandemic-related, whatever it might be, she added. For probably the last 7 to 10 years, there's been a shortage of mental health providers nationwide. But our area is extremely underserved, and part of that is it's just not Midland and Odessa, but we also serve so many surrounding rural communities. Since there are not clinicians in those areas, those people are relying on the providers in Midland and Odessa for services, so it's just a drastic shortage in our area, Moses said. Typical wait times to get into therapy could be anywhere from 8 to 12 weeks. Sometimes it's longer for therapy, and it's up to 6 months for psychiatric services for medication. It's a dire situation, and one of the reasons I created the fellowship program was to try to help have more in the workforce. Really, the initiative for West Texas is for us to grow our own. We want to find local learners that wanted to go into mental health and really be able to educate them to provide quality services once they're licensed. That's the initiative. Those things take time, Moses said. You have to hit them as undergraduates and then go through the full process from undergraduate to licensed professional. It can take a minimum of 6 years. Then, depending on what type of degree you're getting, it can be up to 10 years, she added. On the right side, Moses said her program is having success recruiting prospective psychologists and licensed professional counselors. It's not as dire as you might imagine. For example, University of Texas Permian Basin has an undergraduate psychology program which has almost 1,000 learners currently enrolled, and they have a Master's of Psychology program as well. So we have resources that could be coming through the pipeline, Moses said. She added that Sol Ross State University in Alpine has a Master's in Psychology program, as does West Texas A&M University. There are programs here. It just really is putting a lot of emphasis and focus on recruiting those learners to actually come into the mental health field. A lot of times people don't know what the work really is like and what it will be like. I think if we do our job in educating the learners coming through that have some interest in psychology or in medicine and what that work looks like, I think we'll find that more people will be attracted to it. Moses added, the growth in our own project started about 3 years ago as she started to recruit people into the fellowship. We really focused on recruiting from UTPB and Texas Tech, and then obviously West Texas A&M and San Angelo State. We've been successful in recruiting from those programs, and Texas Tech Health Science Center also has an online Master's of Psychology program that we've been successfully recruiting from as well. The numbers are low, but it's people coming through the pipeline. I think once we have a steady stream, then we can increase the number of people, Moses said. Most providers in this area, she said, are licensed professional counselors, which is a master's level degree in psychology. You can have a license with a master's level, and you can practice independently as a licensed professional counselor, she added. Moses's main interest is women's health, postpartum and mental health among people of color. She has been with Texas Tech Health Sciences for almost 15 years. I just recently stopped my clinical practice. I created and I'm the director of a mental health fellowship for mental health clinicians and primary care. So now I'm mostly the administrator over that. I stopped practicing, I believe in August, meaning just having my own active clientele. So now I just teach the fellows, Moses said. I'm also the clinical programming consultant for the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Hospital. We're doing everything for that, just getting it all set up, meeting with the architects, so I'm heavily involved in the design of the building, the services that the inpatient unit and the medical office building will be providing. I've been doing that since about the middle of September, so that's been very fun. Quick hits, Citizen of the Year. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce wants to know who deserves to be Citizen of the Year. The Citizen of Year for 2022 will be selected based on the quality and effectiveness of volunteer work performed for the good of the community. Volunteer efforts to be considered as examples of community service include the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, church, civic clubs, local government, education, and charitable or service organizations. All citizens of Odessa and Ector County are eligible to submit nominations and or receive this award. The 2022-2023 Chair of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, Grayson Hankins, and previous recipients of this award are not eligible but may submit nominations. Nominations must be submitted by Tuesday. Trash service. Trash will be picked up on different days this week. Monday rollout carts will be serviced on Tuesday, and Tuesday rollout carts will be serviced on Wednesday. Both Thursday and Friday will have regular service. Residential brown dumpsters will be serviced once this week, and apartments and commercials will be serviced twice. Water and energy. The University of Texas Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference is scheduled for February 28th to March 2nd. On February 28th, a welcome reception is scheduled at UTPB's College of Engineering building. March 1st is the first day of conference sessions at the Midland County Horseshoe with a keynote dinner at the Petroleum Club of Midland. March 2nd is day 2 of conference sessions at the Horseshoe. XTO Energy is the title sponsor. Diamondback Energy is also a platinum sponsor. Register for the conference at https://waterandenergy.com/. Greater Tuna Basin Theater Works will be holding auditions for the first production of its 2023 season titled Greater Tuna. Auditions will take place at 7 p.m. January 3rd and 4th at the Permian Playhouse, located at 310 West 42nd Street. According to the Basin Theater Works Facebook page, auditions will consist of a cold reading from the script. Basin Theater Works is searching for 2 adult actors of any gender to play all 20 characters in the fictional town of Tuna. For more information, call 432-362-2329 or email jon@basintheaterworks.org. Show dates are February 24th through 26th and March 3rd through 5th.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.